You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many great ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as I bring you Answers for the Family. Now, I've been doing some studying, and for all of you out there, do you realize that there are 7 billion people on this planet that need to eat every day? So with that said, how is it that some people don't have enough food while others are eating way too much? How is it that so many people in industrialized nations like the U.S. have an obesity crisis, and yet these same people are dying from diseases brought on by a lack of nutrients? Now, our guest today is trying to solve these problems and many more. Now, Danielle Nuremberg is an expert at sustainable agriculture and food issues. She recently spent 2 years traveling to more than 35 countries across sub-Saharan Africa and Asia, looking at environmentally sustainable ways of alleviating hunger and poverty. Now, along with Ellen Gustafson, Danielle is the co-founder of Food Tank, a global nonprofit organization whose mission is to offer solutions and environmentally sustainable ways to alleviate hunger, obesity, and poverty by creating a network of connections and information for us to consume and share. Now, her knowledge of global agricultural issues has been cited widely in more than 3,000 major publications and media outlets, including the New York Times, USA Today, the International Herald Tribune, the Washington Post, the BBC, and that's just to name a few. So, Danielle, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I am so glad to have not only to have you on the show, but I'm glad that you are doing what it is that you're doing. I mean, it's an incredible it's an incredible job. I mean, it's probably one of the most monumental jobs out there, and you guys are really out there making a difference. Now, again, I've been to the website and I've checked it out. And again, for anybody out there, now, if you want to go to this website and you want to check it out, it is foodtank.org. That's FOODTANK.org. And for those of you that are listening via your computer, you can open up another window and take a look, and you can see much of what it is that we're talking about while we're talking about it. And that's the beauty of this type of radio. While we're doing that, then can you, Danielle, just give us a little bit of an overview, you know, of Food Tank and what your goals are?
Absolutely. Alan Gustafson and I were really interested in finding ways to change the conversation around the food system. We have nearly 1 billion people in the world who are hungry or malnourished. We have another 1.5 billion people who are overweight or obese. We waste vast amounts of food. We don't invest in farmers, whether they're in the developing world or here in the United States. And we just really wanted to find ways to change the conversation. That 1 billion number of hungry people and the another 1.5 billion people who are obese, that's the result of a broken food system, a food system that's not working for everyone. And one of the big things that we hope to do over the next 2 years is come up with new metrics and new solutions to defining what a sustainable and successful food system looks like.
Now, and I want everybody that's listening out there realize that she's saying billion with a B. You know, that is billion with a B. You know, it's just unheard of. You know, there are times in which people will say, well, there's a million of this, a million of this. We're talking a billion, you know, out of 7 billion people on this planet, to have a billion people that aren't eating is just, it's just incomprehensible. So now, how did Food Tank come about? In other words, you got together and you talked about the fact that you wanted to make a difference. You know, that's a great thing to do, but how is taking that next step? How did you get that next step going to be able to not only form Food Bank, but start really making a difference?
Well, you know, Alan and I are often the only women at different agricultural conferences, whether it's the Sustainable Food Summit in San Francisco or the World Food Prize in Des Moines. And we really wanted, again, to change the conversation. We both have about 20 years of combined experience. My research has been on the ground. Again, I've traveled to more than 35 countries talking to farmers and farmers groups and policymakers, scientists and researchers, NGOs and activist groups, youth and women's groups, and really collecting their thoughts about what's working to help alleviate hunger and poverty while also protecting the environment. So, and Helen's work has really been more on the entrepreneurial side. She co-founded FEED at the World Food Program, which is a foundation that helps support school breakfast and lunch programs in the developing world through the sale of feed bags at different retailers, including Nordstrom's and Harrods. And we really just wanted to combine our experience to really, again, change the conversation and make sure that we're looking at sustainable innovations that can really help alleviate hunger and poverty, help alleviate obesity, improve agricultural sustainability, and help improve income.
Now, when you talk about the developing countries, I know one of the concerns with people over here that make the donations is that, you know, how are you getting it to the right people? And I think that's an issue that is brought up from time to time, where people are told, well, yes, but there's cartel people, or there's, you know, various types of people that are sort of hijacking this stuff, and it's not really getting to those that need it most. How are you able to get it to them, or through what organizations are you able to use to get it to the right people?
Well, Food Tank is a research organization. We're not a development agency. We're not collecting funds to distribute to farmers or children in the developing world. We're combining our resources to really focus on sustainable solutions, what's working on the ground. If you look at Sub-Saharan Africa, most people think it's a hopeless place. They think of hunger, they think of famine, they think of disease and HIV/AIDS, they think of the children with bloated bellies that we've all seen on television. Food Tank's job is really to highlight what's working on the ground and what's successful. And so that's why my on-the-ground research has been so important. We're able to tell stories of hope and success in agriculture. And again, that's not something you often hear from the developing world. You know, I think most Westerners or Americans really think of Africa in particular as a very hopeless place. And that's part of our mission, to change the conversation and highlight what's working.
Well, then tell us, what are some of the things that are working?
Well, you know, it depends on what subject we're looking at. If it's improving childhood nutrition, there are several examples of really interesting and innovative school garden programs. I had the opportunity to visit Uganda and meet with two young sort of entrepreneurs who grew up in a small community about an hour and a half outside of Kampala, Uganda, which is the capital. These are two young men in their 20s, Edward Mukibi and Roger Saranja, who had the opportunity to go to university, and they wanted to give back to their community because they knew a lot of the youth in their community wouldn't be able to go to college or get further education. And one of the biggest needs that they saw is that children growing up in this community were losing their culinary tradition. They weren't eating and didn't know how to grow the things that their parents and their grandparents had eaten. And these are indigenous crops that tend to be very high in nutrients. They're easy to grow. They're often referred to as weeds because they can grow just about anywhere. And again, they're very nutritious. And so Roger and Eddie started Project DISC, which is Developing Innovations in School Cultivation. And this project works with nearly 20 schools in the community, helping establish school garden plots, which is something, you know, that a lot of schools here in the United States do. But the difference with these school gardens is, again, they're focusing on indigenous crops. These are crops that are native to their communities. And again, very nutritious, but they're also teaching kids how to prepare and process and then market these crops so that they can see that they can make a living, a good living off agriculture. And so they're working not only in nursery schools, but they're also working in high schools where they're really helping educate the next generation of agricultural leaders in Uganda. So this is a project that is supported by Slow Food International, which is typically thought of as a foodie organization, but they're also doing incredible work to help communities all over sub-Saharan Africa as part of what they're calling the Thousand Gardens in Africa project.
Well, and I think that's beautiful because it goes right to the old saying in regards to, you know, if you teach, if you give somebody fish, you know, they're going to feed them for a day. But if you teach them to fish, they're going to feed themselves for a lifetime. And it sounds like they're doing the same thing with these gardens. They're not only teaching them how to grow the food, how to prepare it, which essentially will allow them to not only feed themselves, but to help feed their community. So I think that's beautiful.
Absolutely. That's the key here. You know, development agencies or NGOs often go into communities in sub-Saharan Africa or Asia or Latin America and tell communities what they need rather than asking them. And I think it's so important for, you know, these solutions to be homegrown and for the people who are receiving the benefits to be doing the work and getting what they need instead of being told what they need. I can't stress how important that is and how often so many NGOs make the mistake of just looking for a need to fill rather than asking communities what they actually want.
Well, now having, again, read your website and actually listened to you and some of the videos that you have on there, now you use the term food insecurity. Explain to everybody what that term means.
Food insecurity is basically not getting enough calories or nutrients to live a healthy life. That's the simplest explanation. So if you're not getting enough calories, you're hungry all the time. If you're not getting enough micronutrients, you know, these are the things that are often found in vegetables and protein-rich crops and animal products. These are things that if you're not getting enough of them, you'll be sluggish. Children who don't receive enough micronutrients their growth is stunted. Their mental development is stunted, and they don't grow up to be fully functioning adults in many cases. And so it's so important that proper nutrition is provided, especially during the first 1,000 days of a child's life. Also, that mothers are receiving proper nutrition while their children are developing in utero.
Oh, sure. Now, and one of the statistics, again, that I thought was staggering was, now, you'd say there's 17 million children nationwide, just here in the United States, that are struggling with food insecurity?
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem that we think is always in another country or in another part of the world, but there are around 50 million Americans who are hungry in the United States, and as you said, there are around 16 or 17 million children who are not getting enough to eat every day, and again, that's something that causes them to, you know, have stunted development. They can't do well in school. Because they're not getting the proper nutrition that they need. Worldwide, there are about 150 million children who are hungry each day. And, you know, again, this is not just a social problem, it's a moral problem that, you know, especially in places like the United States or other rich countries, no one should be hungry.
I couldn't agree more. I know, you know, that many of these statistics are mind-boggling, but if you can just share some of the data that your group has put together that makes this such an important issue for all of us around the world, for everybody to be able to get their mind around so that they can start looking at what they can do.
Well, one really interesting statistic, you know, one out of every seven people goes to bed hungry each night, and that's staggering to me, because if you're in a room with 50 people, you understand the sort of impact that we'll have there. We produce more than enough food to feed every man, woman, and child on Earth today, but the problem comes in accessibility, in affordability. People, particularly in the developing world, don't have enough money to buy food. And since 2007 and 2008, when the food and financial crisis began, food prices have skyrocketed for the poor. The poor spend about 80%, up to 80% of their incomes on food in some countries, meaning that, you know, they have very little left over to pay for, you know, school fees or to pay for transportation or to pay for housing, so that their nutrition often suffers because they just simply don't have enough money to cover all of their expenses. We waste tremendous amounts of food, and again, this is not only sort of an economic problem, but it's a moral one when we consider that we're wasting 1.3 billion tons of food every year. That's enough food to feed everyone who is malnourished right now. In the United States and other industrialized countries, we waste about 40% of all food, not because of pests or disease like it is that's the root of food losses in developing countries, but because we simply throw food away because we don't value it that much. So these are all, you know, sort of intertwined issues that Food Tank is hoping to bring together and really articulate in compelling ways, not just to, you know, people like you and me, who I call eaters, but also to people who have decision-making power at research institutions on agriculture and for policymakers, and particularly for the funding and donor communities, the big foundations who are investing in agriculture all around the world. They need more education and more awareness about not just the problems that are out there, but also the solutions.
Well, now, tell us what some of the steps that other countries are taking that possibly we could learn from here in the U.S.
Well, one interesting thing that I've been thinking about lately is, especially with the drought that hit the U.S. last year and still continues because we're not getting as much snowfall as we should be during the winter, and that's likely because of the impacts of climate change. I think American farmers are starting to realize that they may have a lot to learn from farmers in other parts of the world, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, who have been dealing with the impacts of climate change for a long time now. These are farmers who have invested in innovations like rainwater harvesting or solar drip irrigation, or finding ways to grow more perennial crops that use water resources better than our monoculture crops of maize and soybeans here in the United States. I think, you know, in terms of what farmers are doing with intercropping, that's growing different crops together, using agroforestry methods, that's growing trees along with crops. These are really solid innovations that can help farmers create resilience on their farms. And that resilience is not just to climate change, but food price shocks or conflict or natural disasters. If you have a resilient farming system, it can withstand a lot of these challenges.
Wow, I like it. We have an instant message coming across. This one reads, I am a school teacher. Last year, we did a blind food study with 100 students in our school. We asked that they make a list of the foods they ate each day. As expected, we found that their intake of fresh or raw vegetables was almost negligible. 90% of their diets were processed or high carb, low nutrient foods filled with preservatives. It's no wonder we have so many health problems. Can you please comment on this?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a huge problem. We talk about the lack of diversity in diets among people in the developing world, but we also have a huge lack of diversity in our own diets here in the United States. Children aren't learning how to eat vegetables from an early age, and this is often because their parents aren't growing up with the skills to learn how to cook different vegetables or incorporate them into their diets, or they simply don't have access to them. There's a huge problem of low-income areas in this country not having access to a grocery store that is within walking distance or within driving distance. People often have to travel very far to get to a grocery store, and farmers markets are simply non-existent. So a lot of people are getting their food from liquor stores or convenience stores where vegetables or fruits that they happen to be there are very expensive. So they don't really have a choice but to rely on processed foods often. People in low-income areas, we often don't think about sort of the challenges that they face, but many of these folks have, you know, two or three jobs, and it's much easier and cheaper for them most of the time to depend on fast food. Low-income residents also don't often have, you know, completely functioning appliances in their homes. You know, their often stoves are not working. They depend on microwaves or, again, on takeout food to really fulfill their calorie requirements for the day. And you know, when you look at sort of the statistics on what people eat in this country, the majority of vegetables they eat are potatoes and iceberg lettuce. And again, it's because we don't know how to, we've forgotten how to cook these things. There's a huge lack of culinary knowledge in the United States because we've all become dependent on sticking something in the microwave or again, picking it, you know, up from a fast food restaurant on the way home. So reestablishing not only culinary traditions and teaching people how to cook again and finding ways for, you know, people to make the time to do this, we really have to concentrate on conviviality. You know, we don't know how to eat meals anymore. We eat on the run. Parents are trying to feed their kids between school and soccer practice and what other, you know, the other activities they're involved in. Or again, parents are just too stretched for time. So it takes a lot of systemic sort of changes to make these to make our diets more diverse again.
Well, I couldn't agree more. We are talking with Danielle Nuremberg, and she is one of the co-founders of Food Tank. If you have not logged on and opened up a separate page, you can go to foodtank.org, and you can watch what it is that we're talking about. We're going to take a break right now. You are listening to Answers for the Family, and we will be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. We are talking with Danielle Nuremberg of Food Tank, and we were just talking a little bit about some of the in some of the lower income areas and families that are holding down two and three jobs, just not having the time to be able to get nutritious food to their children. And anyway, Danielle is talking to us about some of the things we could do. But one of the things that came to mind to me is that I mean, rather than, you know, from a government standpoint, us focusing on spending so much money on, allowing them to be able to get, you know, fast food or things like that. I mean, it seems like if we could set up some of these, grow areas, rather than put in six more fast food places in a particular neighborhood, if we could set aside something and have neighborhood grow areas where people could, they could get together, they could talk about the things that they can do, the food that they can share. I mean, it seems like this would make a lot more sense, and especially for those people that just, you know, they need it. They don't have the money for it, or don't have the time. So that combination seems like it would make more sense to have something put in each neighborhood. What do you think, Danielle?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think urban agriculture is something that's becoming more and more popular, not only among, you know, foodies and hipsters, but also in low-income areas in the United States. A growing power, which started in Milwaukee and is now spreading to other cities, was started by a former professional basketball player, Will Allen. And he saw real, need in his community to provide opportunities for youth and to provide better nutrition for these urban areas. And so growing power is a an urban gardening program that teaches, you know, disadvantaged youth not only how to grow food, but also how to market it. And they've become hugely successful in providing additional opportunities for low-income residents. And, you know, you see these examples all over the world. Again, in the developing world, because of the food and financial crisis and the skyrocketing prices of food, there are more and more people who have to grow food in cities because they can't afford to buy it. And you see, you know, places like Kibera, which is the largest slum in sub-Saharan Africa, is located in Nairobi. It has anywhere from 700,000 to 1 million people. In that community, women in particular have organize themselves into what they call self-help groups. And one of the groups that I met with during my trip there was using tall sacks that they filled with soil. These were tall, empty rice or maize sacks that they filled with soil, and they were able to grow food on the top. And also by poking holes around the perimeter of the bag, they were able to grow food on different levels. Things like kale and spinach and tomatoes and okra and other leafy green vegetables. And these, they're able to sell part of what they're growing to other consumers in their community, so helping boost their income. But these sacks, these vertical gardens, as they call them, these tall sacks, became a really important source of food security in 2007 and 2008 when there were elections in Kenya, and there were a lot of strikes, and so not a lot of food could be transported into Kibera. But the women who were growing food in these vertical gardens, they and their families didn't go hungry because they had a very local source of food that they could depend on. And you see other examples of how farmers all over the world are really farming the city and boosting their incomes and boosting their nutrition.
Now, you mentioned a little bit earlier that here in the States that that if anybody is getting any sort of fruits or starches, that the majority of it is, you know, you said just basic lettuce. I could think iceberg lettuce and potatoes. And you also now just mentioned kale and spinach. Now, we as a family have shifted almost all of our salads into a kale or spinach type salad. What are some of the other things that families can do right now, just little things that they can do to add more nutrients into their family by replacing, let's say, iceberg lettuce with spinach or kale? And in the same situation with, you know, things we can replace that those potatoes with.
Well, I mean, families have so many different options when they go to a grocery store, but often it's just easier for them to pick the things that they're familiar with. So, you know, trying one new food every week, whether it's brown rice or sweet potatoes, which are rich in vitamin A and much more nutritious than regular white potatoes, are two good ways to start doing that. And just exploring your, you know, sort of your culinary options a little bit more, trying new foods, maybe going to a farmer's market once a week or once a month if you can afford it. Or again, you know, just trying picking up different sources of protein instead of relying on, you know, regular old chicken breast, try some vegetarian options or look for meat that's produced more sustainably or locally by farmers in your community. These are just things to try. You know, we're not all going to shift our practices overnight, but really trying new foods and exploring, you know, the different parts of your grocery store or farmer's market can be a good way to not only try new things, but, you know, to also put a face to your food and know where it comes from and how it was produced and who grew it or raised it and how the land or the animals were treated are also really good options.
Well, and that's a great point. I mean, how, you know, now there's a big thing in the stores where there's a whole section that is, quote, organic. And it's interesting that organic costs more than non-organic. What are the real differences from that standpoint as far as nutrients? Is there any studies out there that says that, you know, by getting the organic ones, you're getting a certain percentage greater in regards to the nutrients that are available to you in each product?
There are a few studies on sort of organic versus conventional and the nutrient content, but I think what's more important is really, you know, you don't want to discourage people from eating vegetables and fruits that are non-organic because those things still have those products still have a lot of nutrients and vitamins, and people should be consuming more fruits and vegetables, whether they're organic or not. I think it's more important to really focus not on whether something's organic, but, you know, again, trying to put a face to your food. And there are so many farmers at farmers markets who aren't growing certified organic produce, but who are, you know, working hard to treat the land sustainably and to make sure that the food that they're growing is nutritious and safe. So I don't want people to be scared away, you know, thinking, oh gosh, I can't afford organic. Then I'm not going to change my diet at all. You want people to make the steps that are right for them and their communities. And, you know, food that's produced, you know, not in an industrialized system, but on more local or sustainable systems, those foods tend to, you know, better enhance soils and keep the nutrients within the soil so that the food that we're eating, you know, continues to be nutrient rich rather than, you know, depleting soils with unsustainable practices. So I think it's just really more important that, you know, we don't want folks to make, you know, have to make huge leaps all at one time and switch their whole diets. We want them to see sort of the steps that are there and what works for them and their own families and their own communities.
All right. I've got an email that has come in that reads, I am an employee at a food bank in Northern California. Our system of 7 food banks contributes a huge amount of pounds of food a year, yet I am told that this is barely denting the actual need. I am not familiar with the efforts in other major cities, but is this a typical situation?
you know, I'm not an expert on food banks in this country, but my understanding is that over the last several years, you know, as more people have been affected by the economic crisis in the United States, that more and more people, you know, people you wouldn't suspect actually are depending for food from food banks. And one of the interesting things I think that's changing about food banks over the last several years is that they're working more with restaurants or catering facilities or universities to collect food that is still perfectly good to eat, but that would otherwise be thrown away. City Harvest in New York City is very good at recovering food from restaurants that, again, would otherwise be thrown away and helping distribute it to food banks across the city and to providing meals for homeless shelters or other facilities where there are people in need. And I think another interesting thing about the food bank system in the United States is that many food banks are really turning away from collecting, you know, unhealthy processed food, you know, foods that are high in sodium or high in fat, and really trying to focus on providing their clients, their consumers, with more nutritious food and often more fresh food so that these folks have an option. I think, you know, many folks who have to go to food banks feel sort of like they're at the mercy of whatever's available that day, and giving them more of a choice and more of an ability to choose what they want to eat for the week or for the month, you know, through providing fresh vegetables or different kinds of food can be a real empowering aspect to the food bank system that hasn't existed for quite a while. You also see a lot of farmers markets that are working mm-hmm. with food banks to give them their leftover produce at the end of the day. So these are all important ways to change it, to change the system for the better.
Well, you know, I know that there are many organizations that are doing a lot of great things out there, some of which have similar missions. Can you talk a little bit about which ones that Food Bank is aligning with that is helping you make the greatest impact?
Sure. Our organization is actually called Food Tank, the food think tank, not Food Bank. But we're working with a lot of different organizations across the world, and we'll be announcing more partnerships over the next few weeks, but currently we're working with AVRDC, the World Vegetable Center, which is a research institute based in Taiwan and who has regional centers across Sub-Saharan Africa. Their focus, as their title, as their name implies, is really helping encourage more vegetable production and consumption in the developing world. Unfortunately, most of the investment in agriculture tends to be on starchy staple crops, you know, rice, wheat, maize, and other crops, and very little investment goes into producing more vegetables. But AVRDC, the World Vegetable Center, has a very innovative program where they're doing participatory research with farmers on the ground in Sub-Saharan Africa, learning what those farmers need and want from vegetable breeding, and helping them, you know, get whether it's more nutritious green beans or sturdier tomatoes or okra that is bigger or more nutritious. These are all things that they're working on. We'll also be working over the next year with the Virilla Center for Food and Nutrition, which is a research organization based in Italy that focuses on environmental sustainability in food production.
Oh, that's great. Now, let's take it right to us, you know, the individuals. You know, what can each individual or family do to make a difference, and not just for themselves, but globally? One of the things I noticed is that, I mean, in going to your, you know, to the Food Tank website, is they can join, they can become a member. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how that will benefit all of us.
Well, we want Food Tank to really reflect what our members need in terms of information about food systems. So that's why we encourage people to join and receive our newsletter and interact with us as much as possible so that we can tailor our research to their specific needs. And we have members from all over the world. particularly Sub-Saharan Africa, but also Latin America, Asia, Europe, and of course the United States. So we really want people to interact with us and tell us, you know, the challenges and the solutions that they're coming up with in their own communities so that we can share them with our wider audience. For individual families, I think it's really a matter of finding ways to, again, put a face to your food. And I can't really stress that enough. Knowing where your food comes from, how it was produced, and making your decisions, you know, based on those factors can really help not just, you know, connect families and get them interested in food, but also help their local communities if they're buying more food from local farmers that really contributes to, again, environmental sustainability, the health of the local economy, and making sure that, you know, these economies and these local businesses are resilient and are able to survive. I also think, you know, there are so many interesting programs. Meatless Monday, for example, is an organization that encourages people to try one meatless meal per week. Not forcing everyone to become vegetarian, but thinking about the meat that we eat as more of a condiment and less as the center of all of our meals. There's so many other protein-rich foods and nutrient-rich foods that can help replace all that meat in our diets. High meat diets often can contribute to certain kinds of cancer, cardiovascular disease, and other problems. So, again, you know, when we have an obesity epidemic among adults and children in this country, it's important to find ways of healthier eating that, you know, again, not just benefit your particular family, but also impact the environment.
Well, and as many people that listen to the show know, that one of the things that I like most are our success stories. Can you share with us, in the time that we have left, share with us a couple of success stories, be it individual or on a greater scale, of the things that are being done out there? Because I think, again, sometimes we get a little bit secluded here in the United States, and people don't realize some of these great successes that are going on, you know, in some of the other countries, and some of these agencies that are making an incredible difference, in helping them.
Yeah, one really good example that comes to mind is the Self-Employed Women's Association in India. This is one of the largest unions in the world. It's made up of around 1 million members, all of whom are women. And many of them are subsistence farmers. But they've done something very innovative, which is they've developed an organic gardening project in a community outside Ahmedabad, India, which they're growing all their food organically. They're using vermiculture, which is worm composting. They're using regular compost to fertilize and add nutrients to crops. They're growing indigenous vegetables. They're growing rice and other staple foods. And the innovative thing that they've done is they've developed their own brand. So they have packaging and a logo that represents their brand. And what they're doing is selling this food to low-income residents in urban areas outside of Ahmedabad. And what you need to remember is that poor people in the developing world often don't have enough money to buy good quality food. So often the rice that women in India are cooking is filled with stones or other debris because it's not high quality. The grains are broken. They're not nutritious. Other foods, you know, whether it's spices or other staple crops, are often poor quality. So the SEWA, the Self-Employed Women's Association, has established their brand as both low price and good quality. So giving urban residents who don't have a lot of money the ability to eat good quality and nutritious food. And this is, it sounds very simple to all of us, but it's so revolutionary. And it really establishes, you know, that good quality, safe, and affordable food should be right for everyone.
I couldn't agree more. What are your short-term goals and what are your long-term goals for Food Tank?
In the very short term, we're building Food Tank as a real go-to source for anyone who's looking for information about the food system, whether you're an eater or a parent or a doctor or a policymaker. We wanted our website to be really rich with resources. So on March 1st, we'll be releasing the first iteration of our resource library. We've been receiving feedback from our readers about what should be included, what major reports, what videos, what infographics should be on our website in this resource library. And so we're collecting all those, and that'll be, again, released March 1st on foodtank.org. And then again, over the long term, we're very interested in this idea of creating a different set of metrics upon which we analyze and judge what a successful food system looks like. So we're building an advisory board of different experts who will help us come up with these metrics. And in addition, we're focused on making sure that the next generation of agricultural leaders are using us as a resource. We'll be building what we're calling right now a food tank co-op to engage folks in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who are working as nutritionists or as agronomists or as policymakers, to bring them together to really talk about the food system in different ways. Often these are people who never talk to each other, even though they're all focused on food or agriculture. So we really want to break down those silos and bring them all together in creative ways. And then in addition, we'll be producing a number of different reports, organizing several food tank summits over the next 2 years, and really building our base of people who are contributing on a weekly basis to our website.
Wow. Now, again, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that you recently spent 2 years traveling over more than 35 countries. What is next for you personally? And we've got about 3 minutes left.
Well, my real focus is on building this organization and making sure that the work Ellen and I are doing is valuable to our readers. So on-the-ground research will always be an important component of our work, but we're really focused on just making sure that the organization is useful to our subscribers.
Well, I think that's great. Now, again, I just want to reiterate to everybody out there that, you know, if you need to get more information, if you want news, or you want to find out more about what you can do to help, go to their website. It is foodtank.org. That's foodtank.org. And you'll be able to see so many great things that are currently being done, and you'll be able to learn how you too can help. Danielle, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And more than that, thank you for what it is that you're doing, because I think that that you are making a positive difference in the lives of millions of people. And for that, I just want you to know that it's much appreciated.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for your kind words. And again, if people want to get in touch, they can reach me at danielle@foodtank.org or visit our website, which is foodtank.org. So thank you again.
You're very welcome. And for everybody out there, thank you for listening to Answers for the Family. We will be back next week, and we will continue to educate, entertain, and inspire. Thank you.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.